Good morning. Welcome in. It is a Monday morning as we say hello from my car guru and to the car guru, Lenny Lawson. Was the Easter Bunny good to you yesterday?
Yes, he was, and I found most of the eggs. Henry, one of my grandchildren, he went for one, but I saw it first, and I dove for it, and it was ugly there for just a minute, but then I ended up giving it up to him.
Yeah. When my girls were little.
None of that is true.
Yeah, I know. When my girls were little, we used to have Easter egg hunts, and we probably made the mistake of we'd have some plastic eggs. We'd do that too, mm-hmm. and I would put different coins in there. Like mm-hmm. I'd put a quarter in one, mm-hmm. right? And I'd put a dime.
A quarter?
In some, yeah.
No gold or?
No.
Nothing?
I put a dime in some, a nickel in some.
Figures.
And each girl, if the other girl found the one with the quarter in it, mm-hmm. they would get a little upset about that the other sister found the quarter one, you know.
Right.
So
no dollars, no silver dollars,
no
Krugerrands.
I mean, keep in mind we'd already spent about $500 on an Easter basket.
Yeah, no kidding. I love those Easter basket days.
Yeah.
I miss that.
Yeah, especially with little girls, you know. It was neat back in those days. Their eyes would light up, you know, on Easter morning and they'd see their Easter basket.
You know, in some ways, I liked Easter better than Christmas. I did get, occasionally, we got gifts for Easter. Did you? Did you ever get gifts or give gifts?
I think
gifts?
So, yeah. Little gifts, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
But, yeah, I actually like Thanksgiving better than the other two, but Easter had its advantages, too, over...
You get to eat pretty good on Easter, too.
You did.
Yeah.
A lot of churches, you know, and our church is one.
And Easter is what it's all about.
It is, and instead of calling it Easter, they call it Resurrection Day.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Because that's what it's all about.
Yep.
Have you ever had a feud with somebody?
No, not really.
Rivalry?
I don't think. Rivalries, maybe, yeah.
Really?
As part of sports teams.
Like competitive, just sports teams? But what about in your business life when you were in, like, a rival newscaster or anything like that?
Well, of course, yeah. It's funny, the local stations were rivals, but yet everybody knew everybody, and we were friendly.
You know, yeah.
So it wasn't. It was a friendly rivalry, I guess, yeah. is the way you'd put it.
It was less friendly with the sales staff.
Yeah.
Right. The people that are doing the news, I don't care. You know, they can be friends with other people
mm-hmm.
unless they're measuring ratings and
yeah.
stuff like that.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Of course, local TV, you don't do that much.
Our general manager told us one time that we shouldn't be obviously sharing any information about the station with our rivals over in Bristol. This is when I worked in Johnson City.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny, when I worked at Bristol for a little while, they pretty much laughed about it. They said, we never paid any attention to that, even though our manager at the time at 11 was always like, now don't be talking much about what we're doing and mm-hmm. things like that, you know, like secrets.
Right. We definitely have rivalries in the car business.
I'm sure, yeah.
Because we are on the sales side of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like a TV station or a radio station has a sales staff,
mm-hmm.
and they're going out and calling on different businesses, mostly retailers, right,
mm-hmm.
Who are trying to sell products, and they're trying to get a schedule. You know, that's what y'all call it, right? I want to sell you a schedule,
mm-hmm.
which would be like 50 commercials over a week or 250 commercials over a month or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that, again, you and I talk about negotiations. Sometimes those mm-hmm. rates are negotiable,
mm-hmm.
aren't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you have TV stations competing for and radio stations. Newspapers, to a lesser degree, competing for those advertising dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you have somebody that works for you and they jump ship and they join a competitor, that never goes over that well, does it?
No, and we used to have, when in our contracts, we would have a non-compete clause where if you left 11, for instance, you had to wait 6 months or a year, whatever's in the contract.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's 2 years, I think.
I've never used those.
Yeah.
In the car business.
We had that, though.
Yeah. Some of the people that, most of the people that left, I wanted them to. you know?
Mm-hmm.
But occasionally somebody leaves that you really don't want them to. This happened to Henry Ford. And his employees were none other than the Dodge brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And without the Dodge brothers, there may not be a Henry Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about that right after the break.
We welcome you back. It is a Monday edition of My Car Guru here on this day after Easter.
You and I were talking about rivalries and stuff. I remember as a Chevrolet dealer in Greenville, our biggest rival was probably, well, back in the 70s, was Looney Chevrolet in Kingsport, but they were second to Sherwood mm-hmm. in Johnson City. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we lost a customer, like if we were trying to sell somebody a car and they ended up going out of town and they would typically go to one of those two dealerships. They wouldn't go to Morristown.
Right.
And so, but we had what was a friendly rivalry. We would go to the Mountain Empire Chevy dealers meetings, you know, where that's for the regional advertising. You know, Chevrolet adds a certain percentage to every invoice. It's typically a percent and a half. Mm-hmm. And all that money goes into a fund. And then the Mountain Empire Chevy dealers or the Ford dealers of East Tennessee or whatever they're called use that money to buy advertising. It's called Tier 2 advertising. Mm-hmm. Tier 1 advertising is what Ford would advertise on a national network.
Right.
Tier 2 is regional. Tier 3 is me, is the dealer,
mm-hmm.
you know, actually running a commercial or whatever. But we had a friendly rival. We would trade with each other. Like if I had somebody on a Caprice Classic wagon that I needed to sell and I didn't have it, and Sherwood did, then we would call Carol Foster up at Sherwood mm-hmm. and say, Carol, you've got a Caprice wagon we need. He said, well, Lanny, I'll trade you something for it, but I ain't going to sell it to you. You know, it was mm-hmm. Carol Foster.
That sounded quite a bit like him.
Yeah, I love Carol Foster. But it was, you know, we worked together unless mm-hmm. we're on the same customer.
Mm-hmm.
If we're on the same customer, we weren't working together.
Yeah.
But we weren't hateful to one another. You know, and occasionally you get somebody that's an employee that wants to leave and they want to better themselves and you don't have an opportunity for them. And so they go on someplace else. And I have zero problem with that. I never have.
Yeah.
It's just mean competition I don't like. You know, when somebody aims their ire at you because you are they perceive you as a threat or something like that. You can be nice competitors but still be competitors.
It's almost like Hatfield McCoy type stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. When it comes to great American feuds, you know, we can think of some in our past. I don't know if you've read about Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton.
Yes, sir.
You know,
yes, sir.
The duel that they had, which Hamilton came out on the short end of that stick. You know, a regional thing like the Hatfields and McCoys going after each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the most famous disputes in history have been settled in lots of different ways. Sometimes they use pistols.
Mm-hmm.
But the truly American way of handling big beefs is to hand them over to lawyers, right?
Intermediary.
Drag them out in courts.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a legal tussle that took place between Henry Ford and the brothers John and Horace Dodge that really shaped the auto industry and changed the way that courts look at corporate responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
The feud also laid the groundwork for how judges, even today, look at the relationships of businesses with their shareholders and their employees and their competitors. The number one reason that case is cited is for Ford supposedly wanting to do right by his workers. This is from Mark Hodak, who is an adjunct professor at New York University's Business School. The idea that he was actually trying to squeeze out the Dodge brothers is something that's often lost. The truth is there's no Henry Ford, Tim, without Horace and John Dodge.
Mm-hmm.
There was no Dodge versus Ford Motor Company if a once formidable partnership hadn't developed into infighting for a leg up on the American automobile market. Ford and Dodge, of course, are some of the most iconic names in the U.S. car history. It turns out that the guys behind both brands started out on the same side. The Dodge brothers, kind of known as unruly pair of brothers that lived in Detroit. They had red hair, they loved to drink, and they had an affinity for bar fights. But they did get started in the car business in 1900, building Oldsmobile transmissions. But just a few years later, they were the chief supplier and outside machinist for Ford Motor Company's Model A. Now, that was the first Ford. Was the Model A. A lot of people think the Model T was first. The Model A came back. Name came back later
mm-hmm.
on.
Mm-hmm.
But they also ponied up a large portion of the $28,000 that investors gave to Henry Ford in order to get started. Well, that investment soon paid off, and Ford turned a $37,000 profit. less than 3 months after selling the first Model A. But the Dodges had bigger plans. They used Dodge Brothers Motor Company banner in 1914 to launch their own car, the Model 30-35. This vehicle was intended to compete directly with the Ford Model T. Henry was not happy. He didn't take kindly to the new competition, and he made a pair of decisive moves to try to take the wind out of the Dodge Brothers' sails. Ford stopped paying dividends. See, the Dodge Brothers were owners of the company. Mm-hmm. Okay, not the owners, but stockholders. Mm-hmm. And Ford thought that a good way to get back at them was to just not pay dividends. Mm-hmm. And the Dodge Brothers needed the dividends, and so did the other investors. And then he slashed nearly two-thirds off the price of cars. You remember when Henry wanted to make the cars more affordable to the common man? He knew what it was going to take to get the volume that he needed. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a court battle that happened. The Dodge Brothers quickly sued Ford. Eventually, it found its way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the case is often described as a win for the Dodges, but other legal experts say that's only half the story. The court upheld an order directing Ford to pay a dividend to the Dodge Brothers and other shareholders. And in doing so, it rejected Ford's claim that he wanted to reinvest the money to bolster the company's production and to boost workers' wages. The decision is often cited for the legal theory of shareholder supremacy, or that businesses should maximize profits for the benefit of shareholders. If you think about some of the arguments that have been heard over the last 20 years in government, especially between politicians, a lot of the liberal press and maybe it's just the liberal press, I don't know, but they think that the corporations owe more to their workers than to their shareholders. There is no doubt that a worker, somebody that turns the wrenches, that actually helps generate the revenues for the company, mm-hmm. are vitally important. Mm-hmm. But the purpose of a corporation is to make a profit for the people who own that corporation. It's not to be a great citizen. It's not to pay great wages, It's not necessary to make great products. Now, if they don't pay competitive wages, what happens? Strikes, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
People go elsewhere.
Yep.
If they don't build good products, what happens? People stop buying them.
People buy them.
So there's certain things that have to be done mm-hmm. for a corporation to be successful. But the number one purpose of a corporation is not to do any of those other things. It's to make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you see General Motors and other companies, they lay off a lot of workers. They cut expenses. They shrink their company because they're trying to drive shareholder value. They're trying to drive dividends and profits for the company that it can either be reinvested in the company to make more products and make more profit, or to, pay dividends and increase the value of the stock. And so this was a big problem, and shareholder supremacy was upheld. A business corporation is organized and carried on primarily for the profit of the stockholders, according to Judge Russell Ostrander, and he wrote for the Supreme Court at that time. But the court also acknowledged another important legal theory commonly referred to as the business judgment rule. The principle assumes that corporate directors generally act in the best interest of the company and have wide leeway to do so as long as their motives are reasonable, or their moves are reasonable. The court cited in rejecting the Dodge's attempt to block Ford from expanding his factory, the judges are not business experts. It is recognized that plans must often be made for a long future, for expected competition, for continuing, as well as immediately profitable venture. The experience of the Ford Motor Company is evidence of a capable management managing their affairs. So, there have been shareholder lawsuits. You think about some of them that have happened in modern times, where somebody grabs a big stock ownership in a company and enough shares to influence the board of directors or influence a seat on the board of directors. But this was because of these rulings, it was enough to spook the Dodge Brothers and other investors who sold all of their shares back to the Ford family. Mm-hmm. So that's why Ford to this day still controls Ford Motor Company. They don't own the majority of stock, but they own all of the voting interest in the stock. So their stock is preferred, and they are the ones that call the shots for the Ford Motor Company, even though they don't own the vast majority of stock. I can't remember exactly what Ford's percentage is, but this was the beginning of that. When Ford started his company, needed all these investors, then was able to push them out eventually. So I think it's an interesting story, and a story about how rivalries can take place in just about any venue, including the car business.
Yeah, I'm sure there's been a lot of rivalry in that, as you mentioned there, over the years. Well, we'll take our last break, and we'll come back and wrap things up. All right, we're back here Monday morning as we continue with My Car Guru with Lenny Lawson.
You know, two of the most sold products at car dealerships in the finance office, this is after you've said, yeah, I'll buy the car, and then end up in the finance office, okay? Excuse me, two of the most sold products in a finance office, other than financing, which, you know, car dealers arrange financing for people and pass on those great rates from the manufacturer, like 0% financing, or maybe through a credit union or something like that. So they make it easy for car buyers to just be able to go to the dealership and buy the car, sign the paperwork right there. Then they don't have to go to a bank. But you will typically be presented with opportunity to buy some other things. One of those things is an extended service contract. A lot of people call them extended warranties. They are not extended warranties. Okay, a warranty can only be provided by the manufacturer of a product.
Yeah.
They are generically known as extended warranties, but they are extended service contracts. It's an agreement between you and another party that if you have certain failures on your car under these circumstances, they will pay for those repairs subject to a deductible. So that's what that is. Another product that you will buy, or that you will be presented, is gap insurance. You know, gap insurance is a created phenomenon based on the fact that cars depreciate. And if you wreck a car, or if your car gets and it gets totaled, or if your car is stolen, both are rather unlikely events, but they can happen. They happen all the time. Then let's say that you owe more on your car than what the insurance company is willing to pay. Well, the gap insurance steps in and pays that deficiency. If you owe a lot more on your car, let's say you pay nothing down when you buy your new car, and you owed more on your old car than what it was worth, then you're going to have negative equity going into the deal. And if you wreck your car, that could put you in financial world of hurt. Okay, I've seen people that are $15,000 upside down. They owe 15 grand more on their car than it's worth. If they total their car, guess who's going to come calling? The bank. And they're going to say, well, the insurance company only paid this much of your loan. You owe us $15,000, and we want it now.
Yeah.
That's what gap insurance does. It steps in and pays that. The other product that you will see are maintenance agreements. Okay, so a maintenance agreement is where you are prepaying for regular maintenance. Pretty simple concept. You know, you're going to have so many oil changes a year, and so many oil changes over a period of years, so many tire rotations and things like that. Prepaid maintenance agreements are designed to save you the hassle, and also maybe save you a little bit of money.
Right.
But let me tell you something that's happening a lot, is people are forgetting that they have it.
Really?
There's so much going on when you buy a car. Please do not forget, if you buy a prepaid maintenance, make sure you use it.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, some people just start, they've gone to the Jiffy Lube their entire life, and they just keep going back, and they go back, they buy a new car, they pay for this $800 worth of prepaid maintenance, and then before they drive off the lot, they forgot they bought it.
Right.
And they next oil change, oh honey, we need to go to the Jiffy Lube. This is happening, and you nationally, 40%, just a little over 40% of the people are letting their prepaid maintenance lapse and never using it.
That's crazy.
40%. So the 60% are remembering, at least sometimes, but the 40% are forgetting. So don't forget you bought prepaid maintenance. Don't forget you bought a service contract either, because some people forget those too.
You know, that's like a basketball team coach having timeouts left and never taking them, leaving them on the board.
That's right.
That's something.
Exactly.
Wow.
So anyway, just thought that might be helpful to some people who are out there in car buying land, and you decide to go into the finance office. And just make sure that prepaid maintenance is a good idea if you're actually saving money.
Sure.
Or it provides some type of a convenience to you. You know, sometimes prepaid maintenance is only good at the dealership where you bought it. Well, you don't want that. I mean, if you bought prepaid maintenance, you'd like to be able, if you're traveling across country and you want to be able to stop at another Ford dealer or a Nissan dealer and get your oil changed. So, right. You know, make sure you understand what the limitations are on your prepaid maintenance agreement as well.
All right. Good tips from the Car Guru on this Monday morning, and that'll do it for us. We will be back tomorrow morning.